from Spring Lake, New Jersey.
Annoying sponsees. I know, you guys don't have them out here, right? No, I didn't think so. All right, buddy, I'm Jimmy. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober, and you probably remember me. I was up here about 4 days ago, so again, thanks. It's a long day when you do these things, you know, and you're sitting there, and it's long for us, it's long for everyone, but we really appreciate it. Just means you're really sick out here in California, that's for sure. Just a few things I wanted to say before I get going here, because before I was so amped up, I must have had 12 cups of coffee before I came up, but yeah, I forgot half the things. But I was just so grateful to be out here. I came out here Wednesday, flew out here Wednesday night. My brother lives here in the San Diego area, and I haven't seen him in a while. So it was really, healthy, or whatever that word might be, to sit with him and break bread and talk about some things. We haven't seen each other since my mom died. So it was really important that I came out here and saw him. He hit a lot of my inventory list throughout the years. And, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, the Age of Miracles, that we could, as a family, heal over a lot of things. And so that was great. And then I had the opportunity to play golf yesterday, if you call it golf, in Torrey Pines with Ken back there, his sponsor, Rob, and Roger. We had a great experience out there. What a beautiful course, and expensive, too. But it's still, But it was just great. And more importantly, last night we went out to dinner, me, Joe, Roger, guy I sponsor here, Marcello, and Joe's sponsor, Ken Devaney. And Ken is one of my heroes from a long time ago. I was a toll collector on the New Jersey Turnpike. Yes, I was the guy you hated every morning that came through. And I was having one of those days. You know those days where you just want to kill everyone? I was sober, and I was just pissed off at the world, and I'm in my little toll booth, and some guy was watching me that was in AA about three cars back, and he's looking at me yelling and screaming at people, and he pulls up, he goes, "Here, why don't you listen to this cassette?" And I said, "What is it?" He goes, "It's an AA speaker." Now, I don't know how long I was sober, but I never really heard an AA circuit speaker, if you want to call it that. And I put this cassette in, and it's Ken Devaney. I laughed my ass off. And I must have ruined that tape, just playing it over and over. Milk the mouse, I guess, all those things. You know, I come from the neighborhood. Like, one of the great lines he used to say was, he'd be in Brooklyn and, a bunch of people would pass him on a corner and say, "Hey, there's a dead bird," and everyone looks up. I mean, that's, we're not too bright, The crazy line, stupidly, that's like no, I'm not even gonna say that because there's too many young people here. You won't even know who that is. But what an honor. And I bartended with his nephew in Jersey for years. Never known that's Ken Devaney's nephew. So it was just a real honor to be out to dinner and see Ken. And I know he wanted to be here. And, it just brought back a lot of good memories. Good to see a lot of the people I've met on the virtual platform are here today. I never saw a lot of you, or some of you. And it's always funny when you see someone, right, live after being on the virtual I didn't know you were so tall. Made me think of Ed Mutum. Remember Ed Mutum? Ed Mutum was a great speaker out of Iowa. He was 6'10". He was the manager of the Globetrotters, And what would happen is if someone would walk up to him and look up at him, he had the biggest hands I've ever shook any, but people would look up to him, "You must have played basketball." And he'd look down and goes, "No, honey, you must have played miniature golf." Corny line, but it was always funny. I used to laugh at that all the time. So we've been given a gift. That's what I've been listening to all day, this gift of recovery, the Age of Miracles. What is the gift? And more importantly, I think what I want to talk about is, can you stay sober with the gift when life hits you between the eyeballs, the adversities of life? I think Bill writes in the 12 and 12, can we stay sober? Can we stay to good emotional balance? And can we live to good purpose when the heavy artillery is coming in our life? Right, and Joe talked a lot about 10 and, taking that spot check inventory throughout the day. I'm really disturbed about what's going on in my life, And I never knew it was a gift. You know, I never knew it was a gift. And last week I did this workshop on prayers and promises and, you know, and all the promises that come out of the big book. But I think one of the biggest promises we have comes out of the 12 and 12 in step 12. I'm going to read this. And unlike Joe and June, I got one of these things that they put in the page. And when you want to find something, you just, like, you just, it's written, watch how hard this is. Oops. So as a direct result of what we've been talking about, what these guys have been talking about all day long, when a man or woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he's now become able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift, which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him he's really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed because he has laid hold of a source of strength, which in one way or another, he had until now denied himself. He finds himself in a possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love, of which he had thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift. And yet, usually, at least in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. So what are you doing with your gift, guys? That's what my sponsor would always say to me. What do you do with your gift? This topic, I guess, is called the conversation because my sponsor is Bob Bazance from St. Paul, Minnesota. And, you know, one of the things he's always said to me is, Jimmy, just let's have a conversation. We don't need to get technical. We don't need to get mechanical. We don't need to get anything. Let's just have a cup of coffee. And, you know, when you read Working with Others, it's not about sponsorship in a sense. It's really about one drunk talking to another. The basic service of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So this gift, what is this gift to you, really? Is it the gift of transformation? Is it the gift of a personality change? Is it the gift of a spiritual awakening? Is it the gift of stepping out into the sunlight of the Spirit? What's the gift? And for me, I think what the gift is how I live in this life dealing with you, dealing with the relationships, because probably the most important thing everyone has in this room tonight is the relationships in our life. So how do we deal with that? With the program of action, the spiritual toolbox that has been laid at my feet, how do I bring that stuff into this world today? You know, I like to tell this story of this gift. About 18 months sober, I'm your usual 18-month sober guy, neurotic, crazy, you know, but I'm trying my best, going to a lot of meetings. I'm back with the wife, like I said earlier. I got the two AA kids. I got a job. I got, you know, I got all these things going pretty good in my life. And I come off a midnight shift. I worked on a highway authority, so I come off this midnight shift, and I go visit my parents. And when I get to my parents' house, I find my father dead, laying right there, right there. Now, I come from a time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I shouldn't say it like that, but it was a time in AA when 12-step calls were a common occurrence. Any night of the week, my sponsor, another old-timer, and maybe another young guy like me would get a phone call at 11 o'clock at night, and they would say something like this, 10 minutes downstairs. You didn't say, well, I got a job tomorrow, I got to go to bed. No, you just knew 10 minutes downstairs, no matter what time of the day it was. And what would happen is the sponsor would pick you up with this other old timer. We'd go to another drunk's house. And when we got to that house, we all had a role. And the young guys, we would have to, like me, I would have to check if there's any weapons. You know, the other guy might check on the family, see if that's all okay. And then we'd walk into that living room and we'd see the gift. We'd watch the magic. And it'd be two people like June and Joe, but they'd sit down on that couch and the drunk would be sitting across from us. And they tell their story. And we'd ask that question at the end, do you want help? Are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? And back then, we didn't have many treatment centers. We didn't have many detoxes. So what we used to do is bring the drunk to an AA meeting. And one of the things that shocked me the first time I did this was the guy, my sponsor, would keep a pint of whiskey in his car in the glove compartment. I'm like, we could do that in AA, carry booze? You know, I didn't know, you know. I didn't know it was for that guy. I thought it was for us. We just had a hard night of work, you know, working with this guy. But truth of the matter is, I never realized, you know, convulsions or going into, you know, alcohol withdrawal. So we would have to give that guy a drink. And we'd bring him to a meeting, and he'd be shaking and baking over there in the corner. But the gift of seeing that. So I'm 18 months sober, well-versed in what a 12-step call is. My father's dead on the floor. Call my sponsor up, because that's what I do, and he says, okay, let's pray and call 911. So I call 911. He's really praying. I'm just crying, looking at my father. It didn't even look like my father on the floor. He looked so distorted when the first cop shows up. And the first cop's taking down that information, and he's looking at me, and he's like, I don't see you walking the streets anymore. I said, yeah, I don't do that anymore. Taking a little bit more information down, he goes, matter of fact, I don't even see you drinking in the bars anymore. I said, yeah, I don't do that either. He goes, how do you do that? I go, well, I go to this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been sober 18 months. And all of a sudden, he starts to talk about his drinking. And before you know it, I'm 12-stepping this cop over my dead father's body. I tell you this story for a reason. Last year, just about this time, my home group got a big home group, pocket of enthusiasm. The girls are reading the book over there. Guys are reading the book over there. A bunch of us are talking about something over here. When all of a sudden, I get a tap on my shoulder. When I turn around, the guy looks familiar to me, but I don't know who he is. He goes, he introduces himself, tells me his name. He goes, I was the police officer that was with you the day your father died. And I've been looking for you, because we both went different directions. He goes, I've been looking for you because I want to let you know, because of that day when you sat with me over your dead father's body, I've been sober ever since that day. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 34 years sober. Wow. Now, I don't tell you that for a pat on the back. I don't tell you that because I have the power to get anyone sober. I don't tell you that because I have the power to get anyone drunk. I tell you that because God will use you without your permission. I need a drunk, not to drink. That's the magic of step 12. That is the gift of having a conversation with someone that's just like us, where we can share our experience, our strength, and our hope with that person. Matter of fact, there's a promise in working with others where it says, you must carry this message to other alcoholics. You could help when no one else can. You could secure their confidence when others fail. I don't know how many times that cop tried to get sober. I don't know if he went to a treatment center. I don't know if he went to an employee assistance program. I don't know any of that stuff. All I know is on that day, God put two drunks together. And we anteed up. We told our stories. I shared my experience, my strength, and my hope with them. And the net result was he was still sober. So that's the gift. That's why the age of miracles is so important in our lives. That's what I've come to find out. That other wolf that raised me, my mother, if it wasn't for what they talked about today, I would never have come to find out that I had it all wrong about my parents. I had it completely wrong with my parents. My alcoholism was like a veil. I couldn't see the truth about my relationship with my parents. And when my dad died, my mom never remarried. Mom's old school, never drove a car in her life. My mom is a Jane Fonda workout freak. You remember that? VCR, little leotard outfit on, watching my mother jumping up and down in the living room. My mother was in phenomenal shape until she died. At 90 years old, my mother needed a knee replacement. The doctors came to us and said, your mom needs a knee replacement. And we're like, what are you, out of your mind? He goes, she's in better shape than all her kids put together. So my mom had a knee replacement at 90 years old. If anyone's in a medical profession here, you might know that when you put a 90-year-old under anesthesia, it can go a little sideways. And it went sideways big time with my mom. She wound up getting dementia, full-blown dementia. And so we had to start taking care of my mother. So one day we're sitting at my house and we're having lunch. It was me, my wife, and my mother. And my mom looks at me and she goes, I couldn't find you. What? I couldn't find you. What are you talking about? I walked the streets for 2 years looking for my son. and I couldn't find you. And I wanted to respond to that. I wanted to justify that. I wanted to say, Mom, I made amends to you 27 years ago. What are you talking about? But it was as though God grabbed me by the back of the head and said, just be quiet and listen. Because after about 2 minutes, she forgot who I was. We couldn't take it anymore. We couldn't handle my mother's dementia. My mom went MIA one night out of the middle of the middle of the night out of a house, and the cops found her at 3 o'clock in the morning. She had no idea where she was at. So we knew we had to do something. And me, my brothers and sisters, we got a little group conscience going. We got to put her in an assisted living, and we did. And then the pandemic hit. And 43 people in that assisted living place died of COVID, my mom being one of them. And I tell you this story for a reason, because it's a gift. It's a gift. It's the age of miracles. It's the conversations we have with the people we love. And so I go to, I just had my third knee replacement. Yeah, I'm one of those guys. Talking about adversities, I've had 41 surgeries since 2001. I'm really 5'8", but with all the metal in me, I'm 6'4". It's a miracle how it happened. So I just had my third knee replacement, and I get a phone call from a hospice nurse. Your mom's gonna go. You gotta get here. And it was about 2 miles away from where I was at, so I go over there. All my brothers and sisters live around the country. I'm the only one that lives in New Jersey. And back then, if you remember, if you had to deal with this, you know, you had to take a COVID test and you had to put the PPE on, and, you know, and I'm about to go in. I got my sisters hitting me up on the phone, FaceTime mommy, FaceTime mommy. And I'm like, okay, because I think I'm going in that room to see the 50-year-old Jane Fonda version of my mother. Now, I haven't seen my mother in about 6 months because everything was locked down in Jersey. But I go in there, nurse stops me. She says, Jim. I said, yeah. She goes, she can't open her eyes and she can't speak, but she's going to know you're here. A gift. When she pulled that, whatever you call it, the curtain, I'm sorry, the curtain back, there was a skeleton laying in the bed. My mom. The gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. Heard a little bit about it today. How many podiums have I heard about from you guys, from other people, from speakers, of how you dealt with the hardest thing in your life? But you stayed sober, because this is the age of miracles. How many of you people have lost a parent, lost a child, went bankrupt, went divorced, lost all your money, you know, on and on and on, the adversities of life. We all have adversities. None of us are immune to that. That's life. But can I live life on God's terms rather than Jimmy's terms? And here I am faced with that proposition. Spiritual life, spiritual death. How am I going to show up in this situation? The gift is I sat down with my mom and I grabbed her hand. And when I said, hello, Mom, her chest exploded with oxygen. Her son has come home. A gift. And I had that moment. The moment all you guys talk about. The moment of being with someone who's going to pass on. And to let her know, Dad's waiting for you at the big house. And when I let go of her hand and left, she died an hour later. I didn't know how lucky I was in that moment. I didn't understand the gratitude that I felt for that moment. And it wasn't until I asked myself this question, does God hear my prayers? Does God hear any of our prayers? Joe answered that on his last talk. Because when you open up the prayer of St. Francis, and it's a prayer I've been saying since probably I've been 5 years sober, if not longer. I've been saying that prayer for well over 30-something years. And yeah, a lot of times our prayers just become words. You know, you could read a lot of stuff that we have, they just become words. And yeah, when we read chapter 5, how it works, a lot of us zone out but it's probably the most important reading we have in our literature is chapter 5. But this prayer of St. Francis, all of a sudden, it just came alive to me on that day. And I can't remember the whole prayer, but rather to love than be loved. Rather to be, you know, all the stuff it's asking me to do. And I knew God hears my prayers. The gift. the Age of Miracles is with us. What a life we've been given. One of my old sponsors used to say this all the time to me. It was a consideration, a question. He said, Jimmy, I want you to ask yourself this question every day. Do you look at the people in your life, the situations in your life, and the circumstances in your life through the lens of a character defect or through the eyes of God? Do I look at my family members? Do I look at my brother this weekend? Do I look at my ex-wife? Do I look at my, you know, my neighbors? Do I look at my friends? Do I look at my AA group through the eyes of anger, or through the eyes of fear, or through the eyes of judgment, or any of that stuff? Or do I look at it through the eyes of God with compassion and forgiveness and love? If love and tolerance is our code, is it really? Or are we just sitting around judging everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous because we don't like their talks? How am I showing up? I've been given a gift. What am I doing with this gift? Life will take on a new meaning to watch people recover this, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see your fellowship up, grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with each other or newcomers in each other is the bright spot of our lives. The old timers used to always make this promise. If you come all the way in and sit all the way down, the feelings of isolation and loneliness will leave you, and it will be replaced with long relationships and friendships for the rest of your life. And when I look around the room and the people I know in the room and all across Alcoholics Anonymous, all over the place, the people I've met, my life has been filled with this gift, the Age of Miracles. It's amazing. So God put me on this path that I never expected to be put on. 2005, we decided to start a home group in my neighborhood, a three legacy group. We wanted to talk about the steps, obviously. It's a big book study meeting. We wanted to talk about the service structure. We wanted to talk about the traditions. And so we met at my house. It was about 30 of us. Not 30 of us, 12 of us. And like Bill talking about, you know, hammering that on the anvil of experience when he wrote the traditions, we wanted to hammer out with our experience a format that would really be exciting for our home group. And so on January 22nd, or the day before, 2006, we went to prayer. And we prayed that 30 people would show up to our home group the first night. And on the first night, 175 people showed up. We had to ditch the tables and get more chairs. And I know there's big meetings in California, but this was a big meeting. You know, and today, you know, 18 years later, we're averaging anywhere between 200 and 300 people every Sunday night for a big book study. And as we go through the cycle, then we do a three-week tradition workshop, and then we do the cycle, and then 3 weeks of the concepts, right? We're trying to show everyone what Alcoholics Anonymous, all three sides of this triangle, are really about. And on year one, after we were a meeting the first year, we became a group, and they needed a GSR. And they said, Jimmy, why don't you be the GSR? I don't want to be the GSR. No way. I don't want to do any of that stuff. I'm a great home group member, but I never did service outside the group. I'm 19 years sober. And why I said that and why I answered that way? Because I'm afraid. I'm afraid to do something I never did in Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of my ego, I don't want you guys to see me be in fear, fail, any of that stuff. But you know how it works, right? The business meeting's going on. Who's going to be the GSR? And your arm starts to go up, and you're having a conversation. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And I become the GSR of this group. And I tell you that for a reason. February of 2017, I go to this thing called the Northeast Regional AA Service Assembly, a bunch of service junkies down in Hunt Valley, Maryland. And I'm terrified to walk into this hotel. There's 1,500 people, GSRs, DCMs, trustees, delegates, you name it, everyone in the service world, and I am terrified because I don't know what the hell's going on. And I walk in there, and I meet these two guys from my neighborhood, who I think are just old guys from my neighborhood. Little do I know, one's a past United States trustee at large, and the other one's a past Northeast Regional trustee. And I don't expect you to know what all that means. It just means they've been serving for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, of carrying this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I'm at this conference, and I'm like, you know, they take me under their wing, and by the end of the weekend, I'm all jacked up. I'm all jacked up. I'm in. I didn't understand the gift I was just given. And I become a GSR, and I become, you know, I start to work down that inverted triangle, and this guy, John, who was the past trustee at large, becomes my service sponsor. He gives me a real doozy of a book. I don't know if any of you guys read this book. It's called The Service Manual. But he only wanted me to read one thing. On the old manual, it was on S20. Why do we have a conference? Why do we do the things we do in Alcoholics Anonymous? What's your gift? Is it really the age of miracles going on? Or now that I got the cash and prizes, I'm all good to go? And see, what he did was he put me on a path that I had no idea I was ever going to be on. Why do we have a conference? It's written by a guy by the name of Bernard Smith, a non-alcoholic trustee for the General Service Board, who was Bill Wilson's personal lawyer and who put our structure together. And in that little excerpt, he asked a question. Why do we do the things we do? It's not to ensure our sobriety. Look at guys, look around. We're all here. I know when people show up at Joan's group, she's going to get the girls around that young lady and help her out. I know when guys show up at Joe's group, you're going to grab that young guy and you're going to start doing the things that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. But why we do this? Is for that guy or girl right now in La Jolla, California. Because I can guarantee you right now in La Jolla, am I saying that right? California, there's a guy right now at 4 o'clock in the afternoon cracking open a bottle of whiskey. And he can't wait to take that first chug and wash his day away. And little does he know right now there's 50 guys in here that have a solution to his problem. Right now, in La Jolla, California, there's a single mom who can't wait to put those three kids down and crack a bottle of wine and wash her day away. Right now, in whatever your local hospital is, all the way across the United States of America to my house on the East Coast, and every hospital in between, there's a baby being born destined for alcoholism. So I started to understand the gift. I started to understand the age of miracles. And that is that we have to get to that person. And we have a responsibility, I believe, to make sure that the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous are always open, just like they were for June in 1972, for Joe in 1989, 90, whatever he said, and for me on March 28, 1987. So I bought into the gift of one drunk helping another, and carrying a message to the best of our ability. And how do we do that? We do that in a lot of different ways. Through committee work, through, you know, being a GSR, through carrying a message to our doctors, our lawyer, our clergy, I mean, whatever it is. Tom Iverson used to say this all the time. Always make sure you have a commitment to somewhere where you don't want to wind up. So if it means you don't want to wind up back in jail, bring an AA meeting into a jail. If it means a treatment center, treatment center. Detox, detox, you know? And I started to understand this gift of sobriety, the gift that we've been given. You know, and again, you know, I went down that inverted triangle and, you know, one miracle after another. I became a DCM, I became like an area chair, I became the alternate delegate, and last year I rotated out as the delegate to the General Service Conference for my area. A true honor, right? And we met in Brooklyn. 93, well, it was 135, 93 delegates from all over the United States. I'm part of the, I'll put a little target on me right now. I'm part of the conference that changed the preamble. How's that? Woohoo! And the 12 and 12, woohoo! But I'll tell you what, I can't tell you how many people came up to me and said, how'd that change? And I got one question. Do you have a GSR in your group? No. Not much I could tell you then. Because if your group's not connected to Alcoholics Anonymous, you're not going to find out about the things that people are looking to change. Because everything that changes in AA come from you. Come from groups, come from districts, come from areas. And I bring all this service stuff up for one reason and only one reason at all. We all have a responsibility. Dr. Bob talks about it all the time. And if you read his story, he talks about the four reasons why it's really important to pass this on. Number one, it's a pleasure. How many of us have sat at a kitchen table with someone right across from you, man, female, doesn't make a difference, and you don't even know what their face looks like because their forehead is tied to their sneaker. Because of the shame, the guilt, and remorse of alcoholism and what it has done to us and them, they can't lift their eyes and look you eyeball to eyeball yet. But how many of us have sat at a kitchen table and seen the dead come alive? Well, all of a sudden, their head comes up, and you're like, wow, Joe got blue eyes. Wow, Mary's wearing glasses. I didn't know that. And we see the dead come alive at our kitchen tables. What a pleasure to see that. What a pleasure to go to a treatment center, or what a pleasure it is to go to a jail or a prison and bring a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's the gift. And if that person comes out, they come to your home group and they thank you for bringing a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous into a jail. I got your message. Thank you. Thank you that there's a place for me to come. What a pleasure. Dr. Bob talks about a sense of duty. And I always think about 1965. I was 8 years old at the International Convention in Toronto. The responsibility statement comes alive. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA to always be there. For that, I am responsible. Am I being responsible in that? Or no, I'll just stay on Zoom tonight and not do anything. I hate saying that like that. I didn't mean it like that. But you know what I mean. Sometimes I forget about the gift of carrying this message to the alcoholic. Dr. Bob talks about a debt. I owe a debt to Richie Schnorr. Who's Richie Schnorr? Richie Schnorr was the guy that 12-stepped me in Newark Airport. Richie Schnorr wasn't supposed to be in Newark Airport that night. What he did was he took a shift from another AA worker because that guy had a family event. And my question always I ask myself is, what's the chances that I would have met the other guy if he was there? I probably wouldn't be standing here right now. So I owe a debt to Richie Schnorr, God rest his soul. I've been so blessed. I've had 5 sponsors in 37 years. Richie, after 5 years, and he passed away. Bill Grace from St. Paul, Minnesota, who took me through the book for the first time, wound up drinking after 16 years. There was an epidemic going on in New York City at the time. It was called AIDS. And Bill was as big as me, but by the end, he was probably half my weight right now, and he looked like a pencil, and he had lesions all over his body from AIDS because there was no cocktail, or the medical cocktail they have now to help, prevent that. And nobody would hug him, nobody would grab him, but I never had that fear. With all his lesions, with all his pain, with everything, but he just gave up hope. And he wound up drinking and killing himself. And he knew more about this book than anyone I've ever met. Then I had a third sponsor, Artie B, who died last year, 57 years sober. Then I had this guy, Peter, who was my sponsor for about 17 years, who were like brothers, and I needed a new voice in my head. And 10 years ago, I called 3 guys around the country. He said, I need a new sponsor. And I didn't tell him who I was thinking about. All 3 of them said the same guy. Why don't you call Bob Azantz in St. Paul, Minnesota? And Bob's a little bit of a gruff guy. He's a little short. You're not getting a fuzzy, warm, hour-long conversation with Bob. But what you're going to get is everything that every sponsor I ever had has given me, the gift. Their love, their attention, their guidance, their warts. They've shown me their humanness. And I think that's the best thing we could do for any sponsee, show them our humanness. Because we're all going to have bad days. We're all going to have bad hair, spiritual hair days at times, right? That's a gift. And then Dr. Bob talks about the last thing, an insurance policy. The paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. In order to keep this thing, I have to give it away. And how am I doing that? And, I discussed that already. Taking meetings into places I don't want to go or don't want to go back to. Being involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, being in all 3 sides of Alcoholics Anonymous, not being top heavy in fellowship, The age of miracles is with us right now. So I just want to read a couple of promises that are in here that I think are really important about this age of miracles. I think it was June talked about it. Bill Wilson was 6 months sober. Couldn't get anyone sobered up. At 6 months, Lois said, but Bill, you're still sober. I'll shorten the story for all you history archivists out there. But he meets Dr. Bob, right? And Bill has this experience before that, before he meets Dr. Bob, and he meets him through having a conversation with Silkworth. I live right by Silkworth's grave. I think June and Joe might have been there I'm not sure if they came when, I know June was, I have a picture on my phone of being at Silkworth's grave. It's not a day that I don't pass Silkworth's grave and look in there. It's a real easy headstone to see. It's right on an arch. It's right under an oak tree. And when I look in there, what do I see? I see you girls in there. You both have a beach chair. You both have a book in your lap. And I know what's going on. It's the conversation. One drunk talking to another. Reading a doctor's opinion about what we're up against. I see you guys in there once in a while. You got your folding chairs out. You got your big books. You got your cigars going on. And it's one drunk talking to another. See, I know one thing about AA. I have a lot of information in my head. I've done a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I could talk to you about the traditions. I could talk to you about the concepts and world service and all that stuff. But if you take everything in Alcoholics Anonymous and put it through a funnel, when it comes out at the end of that pipe, it's about one thing and only one thing. One drunk talking to another, sharing our experience, our strength, and hope. And that's what Bill Wilson was looking to do. And when Bill comes out of the hospital, what's he say? We commence to make many friends, and fellowship has grown among us, which is a wonderful thing to feel a part. A promise. Is that going on in your life today? The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. Promise. Do you feel that yourself? No matter what you're going through, no matter what adversity you're going through. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in a path that really goes somewhere. Promise. Has your family healed? Because of this process, my family is healed because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the great news that we have here is no one in my family has to change. Just me. I've seen the most impossible domestic situations write it. I went through a terrible divorce. That wife I cheated on, it was terrible. And about 2 months after I went to divorce, I got in that accident on the job. So I was getting hit with things, right? The adversities of life. Can I live life on God's terms rather than Jimmy's terms? I'm coaching girls basketball. I love girls basketball. I hate little boys, but girls basketball I love. The intensity of the game is going on. The action was going back and forth. When all of a sudden God said, look in the stands, Jim. And I looked in the stands, and who's sitting there is my ex-wife with my current wife and my mother. I wonder what they're talking about. And I bring that up for a reason. Domestic situations can be righted. Families can heal. The amends process is incredible. And today, my ex-wife and my wife, we were one big family. It's crazy. It's weird. Feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. I've seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. We got a little time just to tell this one story. I want to tell her a men's story because it's just God is talking to me. And because I'm looking at Marcelo over here, a guy from San Francisco that did a little favor for a friend of mine. So I'm sponsoring this guy out of California. I'm in Jersey. He belongs to a certain notorious bank, a biker gang. And comes to Jersey, and my wife sponsors his mother. And he's sober a couple years, and he's living in a halfway house, and he asked me to sponsor him. And I said, okay, and I'm taking him through the steps, and we get to the amends process, and he had the long list. And three of the things he had to do was, one, come back to California here, Northern California, and he had to quit that biker gang. Let me tell you something. That's not like quitting the Knights of Columbus. It's a lot different. He had to go through a divorce, and then eventually he had to go back to prison for some of his warrants and crimes that he caused as a member of that. And so he comes back to California, and he goes and tries to quit the gang, and they ask him to do a certain thing. He says, I can't do that. They asked him another thing. I can't do that. And then they said, "We know, you know what's going to happen now." And he said, yep. And they took him out in the alley, and Amos killed him. They beat him so bad that he looked, they beat him bad. And then he went into prison. He went through the divorce, and he went into prison. I don't know how I got a picture, but his head looked like an eggplant from being kicked in. And he's MFing me, you, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no gift here. There's no age of miracles. This is horrible. Why'd I ever even try this process of recovery? And he's sitting in the prison yard in Northern California, and he's sitting there feeling sorry for himself when all of a sudden a young kid sits next to him. And this kid's all hyped up and excited. He looks at this guy that I'm sponsoring and goes, hey, do you know if there's any meanings of Alcoholics Anonymous in this prison? And he looks at him and goes, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, I'm here to do my amends, and I had to come back on some warrants, and I just want to know if there's any meanings of Alcoholics Anonymous in this prison. And my guy looks at him and says, oh, crap. Let me tell you what happened on this Saturday afternoon in a prison in Northern California. Two men got on their knees, and they held hands, and they took a third-step prayer. And my sponsee took this guy up to the amends process when that guy got transferred off his pod. And then he knew. He knew why God put a person in his life. He knew why he was in that prison. He knew all of that stuff because of the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I need a drunk not to drink. And God put a drunk in that guy's life. And then he knew the truth about what he needed to do. And he's been out of prison now for a long time. He has a family. They're having some troubles. My friend Marcelo is helping him. But that's the gift we have. A conversation between each other. And we all heal. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. A promise. And I love all those promises because the truth of the matter is, you know, where else are we going to go? Where else are we going to go? You know, this is kind of a solemn talk because I'm just thinking about the gratitude I have for Alcoholics Anonymous. I think about the gift we've been given. I think about the age of miracles that's going on in our life. And all we really need to do is be willing to get on that path, to pick up that spiritual toolbox that's laid at our feet and put this thing into action. Because that's the thing that's going to save our lives. And all we have to do in return is pass it on. Pass it on. And I'll just wrap it up with this last promise. I think it's one of the most, now I lost my little space. I want to be like Joe and June. And before we do the Q&A, I want to end on page 164. Because we are talking about the book today and our own personal stories and how we have formed a relationship with a power greater than ourselves because of the 12 steps. But our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to us and to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come. If your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. The Age of Miracles is with us. Thank you.